David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 381, our year-end special edition. With me are, who else, True Believer, Whirlwind X Kevin and Andrew the L.A. Rabbit.
I'm wearing my helmet.
Happy New Year's Eve / New Year. Delete as applicable.
Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly Marvel-centric podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. It's our choice, really. You can find, listen to, stream, and download episodes past and present over on MarvelNoise.com with that handy little calendar-style drop-down menu on the right-hand side to call forth past months and years. Get new episode announcements, see images, and view cover galleries over on our Facebook and Twitter pages. You can also find other fine podcasts from our shadow cabinet leader, Derek Coward, who's always shown in silhouette, guys. And his Deliberate Noise Network, which is also the home of Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show where we talk indie comics. Boom, that's how you do an intro, guys.
Whoa, I need to take some notes for Indie Comic Book Noise.
Took me all year to get it right, but for the last episode. Well, since it's the end of the year, we figured rather than have the cliched best of top five lists or whatever, I'll save those for Kevin later. Here at Marvel Noise, We last year started the tradition of instead creating, during an episode, our very own year-end Marvel Noise Coolometer. For those of you who remember, the Coolometer ran for a year on the monthly bullpen bulletins pages between the summers of 1991 and 1992, and ranked whatever was buzzing around the water coolers at the Marvel offices on like a hot cold thermometer type scale, and not just comics related. Like, the Coolometers included everything from movies and TV shows to hipsterism, political correctness, and even hygiene habits like flossing.
But, kids on the block.
Yeah, since we're using this little stunt as our year-end spectacular, we'll keep it closer to the realm of this year's comics and other Marvel media, of course.
Yeah, the Coolometer sure made an impression. If it was around for a short time, but I guess you only had so many comics you were reading, and you always saw those things.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought it lasted like 3 or 4 years or something, but that was getting out of comics, so I just assumed, I guess, that it continued after I had left.
We were so young then that every year was a bigger percentage of our life at the time, yeah. So a year seemed like 4 years. They were like dog years, and those, Andrew.
Yeah. And those bi-weeklies during the summer, like, you always remembered, like, events like that.
Right? They, whatever happened to the publish way too many comics initiative that Marvel was doing for a while there? They kind of
There's a little
back.
Something Steve called a pandemic. I don't think that helped any.
I feel like they're still putting out a good quantity of comics. But you're right, it has slowed.
I didn't slow Batman, but he was prepared for anything. Oh, can I say that on this podcast?
Sure. It's the Coolometer podcast. Where does Batman rank? So our Coolometer, you know, the Coolometer was like, cool was at the top. You know, it was like a thermometer. And uncool was at the bottom. So the stuff in the middle was like the middling, mediocre. It wasn't really cool, but wasn't really bad either, you know?
I mean, I'll say my Coolometer is a little lopsided. I think it's a little more top-heavy than bottom-heavy.
Ditto. All right, fire one at us, Kevin.
I gotta give props to Al Ewing this year for Immortal Hulk, Defenders, Sword, and Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, that's an incredible workload.
Yeah, agreed. I had the finale of the Immortal Hulk series itself as up there in the cool section, so I like the cut of your jib.
And hey, yeah, there's our man Peeper walking by too. give him the high five.
I have one that's started rocky but trending upward, and that is home delivery of comic books. Yes, true believers, as you've heard on previous episodes, Andy is back on the subscription train, and I hold in my sweaty, greasy palms a plastic-covered issue of Hulk number 2 delivered to young Andrew Esquire, wrapped in plastic with a little cardboard jobber. And I gotta say, non-believers, I'm not like a big spine tick and corners guy, so I don't really care. But the issues so far have not been folded, spindled, or mutilated. But, like I said, the corners and spine ticks and all that are going to be aplenty. Started a little rough. I didn't like that they sent me issue 50 as like the end of the last one, because obviously I had already purchased one. But I'm excited. Got two new issues, and like I said, they appear within reader quality, so I'm pleased, and 40% off has been fun. We'll see how this experiment goes when we reach the end, but rough start, but trending upwards on Andy's Coolometer. Get your comic books delivered, kids. And as Steve noted, this is the time of year when they used to run all those great Christmas-themed ads to get your subscriptions in.
Yep.
So it's 9.0 or 9.2, you're saying, not 9.8.
For a modern book, it's, yeah, 9.0, I would say. 9.2. Yeah, they're like those corners. Look, they're going to get dinged, and the spine is going to get ticked. Like, there's just no, it's in a plastic bag with just a cardboard cover with your address and everything. I mean, it's better than those paper covers they used to give us.
Oh, gosh, when the comic would slide out from one end and be all mutilated.
But yeah, you're not, but I don't, as noted, not really a condition guy, and at 40% off, what am I? This was more just a wheeze to have fun for the old days.
Well, you want to get those low-grade first appearance at Crime Buster, too.
Well, you know, those are my future investment plans.
Portfolio.
This year saw the finale of the Nick Spencer run on Spider-Man, on the Amazing Spider-Man title. And I'll tell you, I thought it was cool that the Mephisto-powered Kindred guy with all of the like slug tentacles that was way overpowered wasn't Harry Osborn after all. That was cool. And they fixed some of the issues from the One More Brand New Day time, too, which I thought was cool. I really didn't think it was cool, though, that the Mephisto-powered Kindred guy was really the Gwen Osborn twin offspring clone things. Although it was like, it brings it up into the mediocre realm that they did fix some of that unfortunate continuity, too.
Yeah. Is it better to fix that stuff or ignore it, Steve? What's your take? Should we just bury storylines or try and rehabilitate them?
You know, it's funny. Although, I mean, I guess it kind of came around sort of at the end. I mean, I always found Boomerang entertaining. I put the Spencer Spider-Man almost, I put it like basically on the uncool list.
Fair enough.
There was just, it was just too much overwhelming. Like, I really enjoyed some of that early stuff and the Beetle, and like definitely like really some real good highs in that run. But as we started to get into like me not caring about the Kindred stuff, the Sin Eater not really having, like, I don't know, I stopped caring. I was like, this is going to go somewhere. This is going to be cool. And I don't know. It is what it is. And then you started getting into the inconsistent artists with the wonky elastic faces, and mm-hmm. I don't know. And then it was, I haven't seen like this much of an 8-page fight since like Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man, where a bunch of characters are in a room fighting each other, like the Sinister War and all that. I was just like, it was just too much, or the House of Cards just came down on itself for me to rate it too highly.
I agree. I really agree with you, actually. I mean, it was just the aspect of the, you know, I found something cool about it that I was gleeful to find out, because it was pretty lame that it was Harry Osborn and the whole thing and all that tied to the One More Day and all that stuff. Was at least they made an effort to fix some of that stuff. But you know, it's funny because, like, as much as I like the Nick Spencer Boomerang stuff too, when they brought Boomerang into the book and was that, and they ended up losing me on some of that. Like, I was hoping that was going to be some of the best stuff, and I didn't find it to be as entertaining as I had hoped.
It was so weird because I won't say, like, sometimes you, like, there's like an old character showing up, you're like, oh, that's cool, he brought back someone, or like you would Roy Thomas it and you'd be like, oh, that's continuity heavy, but you know, you can do that. And at some point I was almost like, isn't this getting to be like too many references? Like, I'm a continuity guy, but I'm like, at some point I was just like, can we just move forward with like a new story that doesn't have like that monster that was on an alien world? Like, sometimes it was just too much. Like the tablet, I'm like, oh, cool, I like the tablet, but I'm like, how many more of these old story things are we going to have? It was weird.
I want to say right flat in the middle. Now, if we're cool to hot, I don't know what we're going to say, a temperate day in spring or fall. The Marvel Unlimited updates. Oh, boy. It first started very negative. I was kicked off my access via my tablet for weeks, but eventually they sent an update through and it's working again. And thanks to you guys, I checked out some of those new special Infinity comics and everything. But first, I was pretty miffed. I feel like with a lot of this tech stuff, there are these updates that don't do anything on our end. I think they're for the back end.
Yeah.
And it was pretty frustrating losing my access, you know. We pay money for that, and to have it kicked out for a couple weeks was not cool. But I'm glad it's back. I'm glad it's working. I don't really use any of the new features, but I guess they work. Kevin, you guys are both on the Unlimited, right? What do you think of the new, brand new, forever Marvel Now Unlimited update, brand new platform?
See, that's what it's made for. It's not cool that you got kicked off. Like, I didn't have any real problems, but
well, thank you for saying it.
But the thing is, I feel like the update is optimally designed for like an iPad or that type of tablet, right?
Where not my tablet, but I guess somebody
obviously said. Not your tablet, but where I read comics is usually on a desktop or like a smaller device than a tablet. So what they're aiming for is where I least read comics. So it's and then as far as I know, you can't get it on desktop, the Marvel Unlimited comics. So it's just kind of funny that's how it worked out. So I haven't played around with it like a whole lot. Like, I checked out some of those comics that we're a little bit weird with all the scrolling and the...
I like... You guys were right. I like that Jeff the Shark one.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The rest didn't do much. Yeah, it seemed the perfect kind of silly, you know, sweet sort of ideal for that format. But, yeah, it's really frustrating, you know, when you can't get access. It's one of those things that is disproportionately... Like, the harm done feels worse than it is at the time.
Yeah.
You're like, I just want to read this comic. And
I remember the one year where my subscription lapsed while I was at a con, and then trying to go to the renew page, and it wouldn't forward me to the proper renewal page for like a week or something. Now, that was annoying. I remember that happened to me one year.
I mean, that being said, I'm renewing every year.
I
love the service. I use it plenty. It's worth it to me. But it was just one of those, like, why are they doing this change? Like, I hope it helps somebody, because it certainly didn't do a lot for me, but now it's working again, and I'm a happy camper. I got to save all the really hot, great stuff for the end, guys. So I'm trying to get some of the more middling things pushed out now.
Your coolometer is upside down?
Wait, I guess the cool stuff, the hot side's hot and the cool side's cool. Wait, what are we doing?
That was the hard thing about the late 80s, early 90s, right? Like, bad meant good and, you know.
That's really sick.
Well, along the lines of Andrew's home delivery of comics, I thought it was cool that Comic-Cons came back. Talk about the circle coming back around. Got to go to the Albany Comic Book Show that was local to me finally, that had been kept rescheduling and having to punt again forward, and then also went to the Baltimore Comic Con, which was a lot of fun to do, as you heard about here on the show.
I went to one show as well. That was on my list, Steve. That was very cool, except I have to put it in the singular, not the plural. It was nice to go back to a Comic-Con.
Yeah, I didn't go to a Comic-Con, but I did go to a con, or an expo, if you will.
Yeah.
But I don't really consider that a Marvel event or close to because it's, you know, it's weird when you're on the other side of the table.
I bet you sold a few Marvel books, Kevin.
I mean, I did. Like, Marvel is more popular, is probably the most popular thing you sell at that type of thing.
Who knew?
But I mean, I don't have a lot else to say about cons. I mean, maybe next year I'll return to a more populated marquee event.
All right, and I got an uncool one for you too here. I thought it was really uncool that they broke up Spider-Woman and Roger.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that, yeah.
In like two panels, they undid what took like 3 years of a slow burn to develop.
Yeah. I still haven't read anything beyond the first issue of that series. Some people enjoy it. That's good. I'm glad that they're enjoying that book, I guess, and that it's getting to higher numbers.
Now, I have something that's a bit of a cheat, but I think it's legitimate, and you boys can make the call. It's something from 2020, but I didn't get into it till 2021.
Oh, boy.
Did it come out in December?
So I wanted to, it came out at the end of the year, so I want to talk about the return to non-mobile gaming by Marvel, and that was the Avengers video game. And yes, I know Guardians came out this year, and I just got that game. But I just started it. I kind of am a little bit behind because I like them to, kind of like with the tech stuff, I like them to get the patches out.
Yeah.
And I don't need to be the first guy on the scene. I would rather other people, you miss stuff, but on the other hand, like I said, they also fix all the bugs and everything.
Sure.
So I really enjoyed it. I know people, it got a mixed review, the Avengers one, but I had a lot of fun with it. It was, they provided a lot of free extra content. I mean, they wanted you to buy stuff too, but I didn't pay any extra money, had fun with the base game, had fun with all the additional stuff. Was a little repetitive, sure, but for buying one game, I played the heck out of it, which is something I haven't done on a console game since like those Alliance games, Kevin, which I know, I think you...
Those were fun.
Yeah. So I would say it wasn't as fun as those, but it was a return to that kind of, maybe a little less fun than that big Spider-Man game from a few years ago, but I really liked it. And I'm excited for the Guardians game, but I can't really say anything because I've played it for like an hour or two or something. So Pat pending, but I know that's cheating because it came out at the end of 2020.
should I get the Guardians game? Is it good?
I don't know. Check back with me when I've played a few more hours. So far, what I don't like is your entry character is Star-Lord, who I feel is the least interesting. You know, he's just that kind of guy that talks out of his hat all the time and extra braggadocio, but kind of a buffoon sort.
Yeah. He doesn't get killed and go to another universe for 30 years.
I mean, I'd much rather be the tree that only says one word or something, you know, from a personality standpoint. But it's getting a lot of good buzz. I mean, I don't know the video game review scene. For all I know, it's just a bunch of shills or whatever, but it seems to be well received. I like the Avengers one. And like I said, I like this model where if you want to pay, you can, but you don't have to. I don't engage in a lot of online play. I do a little bit, but I'm not really interested in... and when I do, I don't wear a headset or I don't talk to the other players. I just join little matches or whatever, but I'm not... That's not my main jam.
Any online play that I do does not require a headset.
Are the games... is the culture fully cinematic universe, or is it comic booky too?
Much more cinematic, but there are some comic book nods here and there. You know, the skins are quite popular for the different skins being the overlays for the characters. So you can get all kinds of outfits, and those obviously are a great place to throw Easter eggs for the comic books in there.
I want Spider-Man in the Fantastic Four uniform
with the
note.
Bag head.
Exactly. You know.
They had that in the Spider-Man game. So there are those things. Some you may have to purchase or whatever. Again, I found what they gave me for free was enough. But if you really want to beat the game to the ground, you may have to pay extra. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't have that kind of time or ability, I guess, to devote. It was just fun. I also like that when you reach a certain point, you can just jump in the game and do a little side mission or do an online fight or go to the little training room and just mess around for 10 or 15 minutes. It's nice to have kind of chunks because I know Marvel really focused on the mobile gaming, which is huge for them. But I'm out of mobile games. I only have one at a time for mental reasons, so I don't spend all my time playing games, and none of them are Marvel related. But I know there's a lot of heat there too. If you like mobile games, check those out.
On that front of the mental state and status, is the gameplay on these games such that you can? Is it so immersive that like you have to give up every other hobby that you're doing for a while because there's so many commands and leveling up trees that you have to and skill set things, or can you kind of just get in there and play?
I get in there and play. I ignored a lot of that stuff, okay, and it didn't stop me from playing it. But like I said, I clearly left elements of the game on the table, but I was fine with that. I just decided, you want to know what? Whatever basic upgrades I can get, you know, you do choose your power trees, but I'm just going to pick what looks good and not kill myself. It does have the outfit upgrades and the power upgrades, but it didn't go as crazy as, say, some of the more role-playing style ones where I feel like there's literally thousands of choices. Yeah. Every time you pick up a device or an item, you're like, okay, compare this to the 18 other swords or boots I have. And, it slows your speed but increases your damage. Like, no, there's some of that, but I just ignored it.
But don't worry, you can forge it by adding a gem, and then exactly. It becomes better. so you never should have sold that. Element. Yeah, you never should have sold it to that merchant when it seemed useless because it had a slot, Andrew. Yeah, it had a slot. Exactly.
You knew. Well, but you didn't do that side quest 16 hours ago, so you're never going to get the red flower that you needed. No, I'm sure there's loads of that, but I wanted to play the story. I liked getting in little fights as, you know, I liked the Black Widow character to play. I thought she had a nice balance of powers and attacking style that suits, but I would play them all.
Cool.
Cap, Hulk. And the more you play, the more you get into... Oh, this is a tank type character, so I can take damage but deal it out and all the different role playing tropes.
I think the Avengers game is on the Game Pass right now, so I think I can play it not for free because I'm paying for the Game Pass. But...
Oh, I should let people know. I do play on the Xbox. That's what I started with. I'm not a big booster of the Xbox. I don't think that was its native home because it is. Not super glitchy, but I do feel like it wasn't the... I don't know. Like, these big games that they put on every platform, I feel... I usually pick Xbox because I'm used to it, but I'm never happy with it. I feel like build them for other four. I don't know.
All right. Kevin. Fire away.
Okay, very cool is the Marvel shows on Disney Plus. Can you believe it that WandaVision came out, and as like crazy swerve, they put out like a black and white 1950s TV series to start out for those early episodes. Something that they packaged it in a way that like it can't be a movie. Like you wouldn't do those episodes as a movie. So yeah, that was cool. And then we moved to like Falcon Winter Soldier, which is more traditional action, but stuff like movie quality, like some of the fights in there, like with the Falcon and the airplanes. And I'm like, this is movie level. Then we moved to Loki, which is just another mind blowing crazy series. And then we finished it up with Hawkeye, which had the car chase in episode 3, which is some of the best stuff, like movies, TVs, shows and everything included. So what a year.
And I finally get to do what you guys do to me. You missed one though. About the animated, the What If? How cool was that?
There's a reason why, because I have something else on my list that's going to mention the What If.
Fair enough. But the What If playing off of the Loki leads me to another thing that I had in my cool section, which is the multiverse being, you know, widely fed to the wide Marvel audience, including in the movies and the TV shows and that's something that as comic book readers, that second hat, if somebody shows up who looks like the character but slightly different at the end of an issue, you totally know it's just a guy from another dimension or another time or the whatever. These things are regular storytelling devices that we've accepted and seen twisted and turned and put on its head for decades, and now after them being so careful and scared to put it out there because they weren't sure how it would be received, boom, between Loki and the What If show and now the Spider-Man movie, welcome to the multiverse, guys. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
madness, I would say.
In support of Kevin, I even thought those Disney shows for me and enjoyment surpassed the cinematic slate of Black Widow, Shang-Chi,
agreed.
Eternals. Note, haven't seen Eternals yet, and Spider-Man. I'm like, I got more out of those 5 shows than I did. I mean, I enjoyed the movies, but the show that having that 6 to 8 hours lets them sort of, I think, inject the nice slow moments, but there's not so much that it's filled with padding. So
and then someone's going to tell me that I didn't reference Baron Zemo. What's wrong with you, Zemo?
But I will say what it was interesting to contrast it with, and apologies to Kevin and international listeners, because I know the TV's all, the rights are messed up, but
yeah, they're
Hulu releases. Again, to cheat, Hellstrom was late 2020. I only lasted 1 episode of that. I'm sure it's a fine show, but it didn't get me. MODOK, I went through, thought it was fine. I enjoyed it, but
it gets better.
Not setting my hair on fire, and I enjoyed Hitmonkey, but I'm still working my way through it. So I thought, and they canceled those other ones. I just thought it was interesting that they're putting some of the more cartoony fare for adults on the Hulu stream, and it's working for me. I'm enjoying them, but they're leaving some of that other stuff like, I don't know if either of you guys saw Spidey and His Amazing Friends on Disney Plus. That was a cartoon, but they're putting the real kiddie cartoon stuff on the Disney Plus, which is smart to get the younger people. I didn't make it through an episode of Spidey. It really is for little kids, but that's fine. I mean, they need stuff to hook the next generation.
Yep.
Before they go into deep space.
And die. Alone. On my cool section, I've got, although there was only one that came out this year, but I still just, after having now several collections in this format on my shelf, I can say after this year that I really think it's cool that they have this new Marvel Treasury Edition format for collections where you get the oversized, but it's like a little taller than wider, but it's got that like poly blend cover that doesn't scratch or fold or anything like that. And you got these big oversized issues. This year, the collection of the Marvel series that had all of the different, you know, the anthology of all the different artists and writers doing stories in the Alex Ross Marvel's universe. But they also have the X-Men and FF Grand Design series, the Mark Waid History of the Marvel Universe, and the Silver Surfer Black Book, all out in this new modern Treasury Edition format.
Yeah, I just got the history of.
For those Grand Designs, those are the only two I think I have. I might have the Silver Surfer one. I don't know, but I like the paper inside too.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are really nice packages. I'm growing to like them. I'm with you, Steve. I don't care that the goofy size messes up my bookshelf. I'm all on board.
And in the mediocre, middle of the realm, I have the retooling of Darkhawk. Because, let's face it, it was broken.
I feel like they fixed it and then broken it. And then they don't realize when they had a good status quo. Like, they'll do a status for one issue, and they'll be like, but that's not the status. Here's a more broken status. And you're like, what are you doing?
I just finished... Well, there's still an issue that I haven't read of the series, but there's some good moments in it that feel Dark Hawk-y, and there are some things that are a little weird, like the size of his guns. But I thought there was one where he's like looking in the mirror and he turns his head quick and the red from inside his helmet, like the almost like comes out and you can see it almost as a speed line of the turn of his head, like it's liquid plasma leaking out of the front of his helmet because he turned so fast. That was pretty cool. There's some cool stuff when he pulled off his helmet, and like when the original Darkhawk pulled off his helmet, that was pretty wild, right?
No.
And then this happens and it's a little different, and they tie him right into the Marvel Universe with people who knew the original Darkhawk, and they're like, so you think you're Darkhawk now? That kind of stuff? There's some good moments there. It's not great, it's not terrible, but at least they're doing something.
I'm surprised someone in the Marvel Universe remembers Darkhawk.
Boy, after our new Warriors coverage, maybe you guys will have to talk me into doing this Darkhawk. You guys like him so much, and I barely know the guy.
So you know what was pretty cool? The Hellfire Gala.
Yes.
And really, the X-Men, or as I sometimes call them, since Hickman's the overlord of that stuff, I would call them the Hickmen. Anyhow.
I refer to it as the X-Fun, because it was fun buying all these crazy issues.
But also, it's not just Hickman, it's that they have these superstars, our future superstars on the artwork. Like, you have Laraz, Kassara, Shiti, Dalterman. Like, it's kind of unreal, like, the artists they have there, too. And they're all contributing to the X-Books. And then you have Marauders with... Dugan doing his best stuff, and now he's moved on to X-Men. Still pretty cool. You had that wild Hellions Gala crashing issue where they were just goofing around and getting drunk by Wells and Segovia. Like, really good time this year.
Yeah, I'm with you, Kevin. It was fun. I want to tie that into big dumb event fun, because I also went whole hog into War of the Bounty Hunters. I know everyone was like, oh, I'm just going to buy a few issues, and then before you know it, I'm buying every single issue I can find. So, yeah, between the Hellfire Gala, War of the Bounty Hunters, it was just fun getting into crazy crossovers that I think were handled pretty well. It's not easy to... We've talked about this ever since Civil War, I think. The difficulty of interrupting your storyline to accommodate these crossovers. But I felt... Generally speaking, those two events did it as well as I've seen it done. You know, there are one or two you point out, but I felt they really did a good job of crossing all that stuff, giving you meaningful issues in each one, contributing to the event and keeping their own integrity all at once, which, like I said, I know it's a necessary skill in the modern big two world, but well executed on both events, and I liked it. I mean, I've recently cut back my trips to the comic book store, but I look forward to hopefully doing another event. I did start in on the next one after War of the Bounty Hunters, the Red Dawn or Rising Dawn, but like I said, have not been able to get to the comic book store lately. I can pick those up.
I got
to
toss King in Black right in there into that mix too, because I felt like for all of the build-up, if you were reading the books that were part of the build-up and kept reading those books, you got more of the story that related to how it all built up in those books, which is appropriate. But yet you also got the its own limited series that was the big event, and tons of different tie-ins that you didn't need to read. But if you wanted to, because you liked that character and you wanted to see a little more of, you know, that character fighting on the streets or whatever, you could do that. And but the way that they tied in Thor and the Venom book kind of as like the main books with the event series itself, I thought it was really good that you didn't have to go, you didn't have to read them all. I love that.
There's some good tie-ins, but I threw King in Black in with Venom as in like sort of more towards the middle of the coolometer.
Ditto.
Because I don't feel like it ever got better than that issue 4 Origin of Null issue. So it's just kind of weird in that way. I guess that issue had so much mythology, and I'm like, oh, this is so great. Like maybe every issue will be that way. I'm like, still enjoyable stuff. But
yeah. Well, I mean, the spider on Venom's chest, that the spider on Venom's chest is a big dragon, not a spider. I mean, that stuff was mind-blowingly fun and cool.
Yeah. I'm going to use another slot on my coolometer here for the artist. Like, I could have put another book in here to do the top 10 list of Marvel books and everything, but I mean, why do that? I'll piggyback on mentioning all those X-Men artists with my previous selection. Marvel has a pretty good stable of artists from a series I would pop into, or miniseries or whatever. Like, I would see T'Chedo on Daredevil, Arcasin Grande on the Black Widow, Ribic on Eternals, Wachter on that Iron Fist, Heart of the Dragon miniseries.
Yeah.
Like, many more, like, great artists out there where I was just like, wow, this is a pretty good year. Like, whatever you... Maybe there's, like, some other crazy books I wasn't reading, but, you know, I mean, I was usually fairly impressed by the stable of artists they have.
Wait, Kevin, you're going to do your whole segment and not mention the person whose variant covers you track down like a crazy person? Peach Archer? Momoko. I'm like, you're not going to mention her? You know, like, oh no, you're...
No, you know. I mean, the thing is, when you do like 500 like variant covers a year, it starts looking a little samey, or you get the profile shot, and I find some of those become uninspired or boring. Like, once you start adding in backgrounds or action that must take more time to compose, those are the ones I'm more excited by. So it was sort of like Patrick Gleason, I think, was doing those. It was either him or someone else that was doing those zoom in headshots too. When I'm looking for a variant cover or something for the same price, I'm like never buying those.
So you don't have any Peach Momoko variant covers in your collection?
I do, but they're not. Like, I have the Black Cat one, but it's not just a head thing, and it works way better with what I would want in a cover. But most of them, I'm just like, like, it doesn't really do it for me. But I'm like, when you need to turn 500 covers out a month, like, I understand.
I'm just saying, there was an artist for a while that you seemed pretty intent on tracking down a lot of her work. And now you're all sudden, oh, I don't know who that is. What? Who's that?
No, I would say I track down Art Germ covers way more than I do Momoko covers. I'm just saying.
Got to make a living.
So you were a fan of the...
That Silver Fox one. I think it was... Yeah, I think they did a Silver Fox one for like half price, and like someone else beat me to the punch. So I was like, oh, I'm fine with that.
So you're off the Stormbreakers in general?
No, no. I mean, I'm still getting the issues that they're doing the interiors for. Like, I'm buying all of those. But that's not really the variant cover, you know, thing. Because I think Archer did a variant cover for one of those two that I picked up. So it was funny that the interior might be Momoko, but then it was like the best of both worlds, right? I mean, it was weird that they got J. Scott Campbell to do one of those covers, too. But anyhow... It is what it is.
Right smack in the middle of my coolometer, I've got, well, you referenced that Dave Wachter drawn Iron Fist limited series. That was a really well-produced book. It looked great. Yeah. Wachter's art was fantastic on it, but it's right in the middle of my coolometer because it's the Iron Fist without the Iron Fist. I mean, he was already pretty... much a depowered character. You know, he could only use the Iron Fist now and again, and then it wiped out his chi and everything. So to depower him at this point seemed more of a, like, the writer's guilt for... It was like a give the Indians their land back kind of a thing that left a funny taste in the back of my mouth. But it was still a good read. I'll give it that.
And there's a lot of cool characters in that book, too,
that
I really enjoyed.
Agreed. And uncool, I'd have to say, since we mentioned the X-Books, that third wave of X-Books that came and thankfully went, the X-Corp, the Way of X, and the Children of the Atom, uncool. There's enough X-Books out there already.
Well, some of those, yeah, were definitely in more towards the miniseries era. Let's explore this for a bit, but it doesn't seem like it's an ongoing concern. Sort of like the Secret X-Men, I think, coming up, too, is only like a one-shot.
Well, in our events, I guess you could say the Magneto trial and some of those other side events, Death of Doctor Strange. There were some, you know, side little... limited series. We don't call them mini series, right? We call them limited.
Yeah. Like the trial of Magneto wasn't gonna make my list, but since you mentioned the death of Doctor Strange, I certainly noticed Jed McKay, and he seems to be a guy on the rise.
Uh-huh.
With Moon Knight, uh-huh. Black Cat, like. It definitely seems to be someone you want to keep your eye on, and that will be doing more books that we're going to enjoy in the future.
Loving that Moon Knight book. Way cool.
Yeah, I think I might be one issue behind, but I'm intending on buying them.
I have the Marvel cartoons as a bit of going towards the... Not the bottom, but we're getting down the cooler meter here because there was no like regular Spidey tune this year. I guess Big Hero 6 maybe wrapped up at the beginning of the year. It's like I feel like we had a bit of a cartoon hiatus.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that's because of COVID or whatever. And then we got What If, but What If? I feel like that comic was so grim that the cartoon didn't have enough grimness in some of those episodes. Like the Doctor Strange episode, I'm like, that was a great episode. The Captain Carter, I'm like, thoroughly enjoyed that. But then you started getting into some of the more humorous episodes, and I'm like, I'm not digging some of those episodes as much.
They had MODOK and Hitmonkey for two animated things that were, I think, pretty well. And like I mentioned earlier, Spidey and his amazing friends is Spider-Man.
Yeah,
sorry that doesn't count as Spider-Man, Kevin, because it has, you know, Miles and and Ghost Spider and Spider-Man in it.
Well, you know I'm not a fan of Ghost Spider, right? I've only bought every series, so.
No, but I'm hearing what you're saying, Kevin, because there's no ongoing series. I mean, I feel that way. I think it's uncool that there's no ongoing Captain America series this year, that they... The other one faded with not a lot of fanfare, and then there's just been a couple of miniseries, and there hasn't been, like, a new book. I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure things will turn around next year. I know another Spidey series is coming, so does that mean, like, the one that I really enjoyed at the beginning is, like, just fading off into the sunset? Like, I guess? So we'll see what happens.
Well, I have a positive announcement, and I want to say I love that they've loosened the return of audio dramas and releasing it from some of the paywall weird stuff. Like, I listened to that Old Man Logan, not Old Man Logan, sorry, the Wolverine, the two series, which I think originally were some kind of behind a wall or you had to subscribe to something, and now they're free and open. I've listened to a bunch of the Old Man series. I don't know if those were behind a paywall, but they're free to listen to. And I'm enjoying them. I listened to the Old Man Hawkeye and the Old Man Star-Lord. And I think I've got Old Man Black Widow is the next one. So it's fun. I like that format as something to kind of have on in the background. They're, you know, super professionally produced with name actors. I mean, Chris Elliott was Rocket in the Old Man Star-Lord one. I mean, not that he's a big movie star, but he's had a long career and starred in his own TV shows and stuff. So they had Vanessa Williams was Emma Frost on it. So there were lots of well-produced, high-end budget things, and they're free. So... get out there and listen to them if you like that sort of thing. I think they're fun. Kind of, I wouldn't carve time out of my day, but if you like having audio on, it's nice. It's like a podcast, but there's a story.
I thought it was really cool the way that they portrayed Elektra as Daredevil in Daredevil's book. We've seen Daredevil be replaced before. We've seen someone else take up his duties. We've seen other people put on his costume. We've seen Daredevil in jail, taken out of the picture. And here we go again. But they've done it in a really enjoyable way between the art, the design of Elektra as Daredevil, the portrayal of Elektra as a more moral character. And her inner take on assuming Matt's role. It's been a really enjoyable book.
Yeah, and the continuation of the portrayal of the Kingpin and his struggles of being in the political arena and what his aspirations may be.
And then uncool, well... it's as easy as Cosmic Kazar and Shanna. You take all this time, you bring him back, Kazar, you give him a miniseries, and this, you know, what's wrong with just having some good jungle adventure genre with, like, just like maybe a little touch of mysticism or something? Because there's, you know, unknown powers in primitive tribal rituals and things like that. That's the world that Kazar inhabits.
So I was okay to bail after issue one is what you're telling me, Steve.
Yeah.
I just looked at that solicit and I'm like, I think I'm going to skip that one.
He's now officially the Swamp Thing of the Marvel Universe.
What?
You know, he's like in touch with the green and the green goes through him and don't need that.
Yeah. So I have one that's could go on the good side of the cool or uncool. So Marvel Legends action figures, which we always seem to get back to at some point in the year. I mean, there were some really good series like Age of Apocalypse, some of those House of X Power of X characters. You had some more villains this year. There was a build, a Xemnu. But then maybe I can use those extra Stiltman legs I have for when they build another Stiltman. Like, they put him on that wave of characters, and now it seems like I'm not going to finish my Stiltman.
Right.
So I'm like, I mean, it is what it is. But what came even worse, like last year, was the pricing woes. Like, double or more for a two-pack of figures, or you're redoing figures because, like, you've done them before. I'm like, I am out. Like, I'm glad they did it a lot to the, like, movie figs or whatever, but it's like, if it's going to be $100 for, like, two characters, I'm like, that is way, way above what I'll ever pay for Marvel Legends.
This is the first year in a long time that I bought just one Marvel Legends figure.
Wow.
But I had to. They finally made the Ditko-y Dormammu.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a good one.
I don't remember if it was this year or last, but I actually went direct to Hasbro Pulse and ordered the Jackson, which is the Star Wars, but it's the same figure line.
Absolutely.
But I will say, I used to buy a lot of those at shows because people blow out the cheap ones. But keep your eye on Amazon. I did get a discounted, the movie stuff is discounted. My last, I got that Ant-Man one really cheap. I got the first Avenger, Captain America, and Peggy Carter 2-pack was on sale pretty cheap on Amazon. So I picked that up because it was cool having that's them in the World War One outfits.
Yeah.
I don't really need the extra heads and stuff, but I don't really care. I mean, I'd rather have it a dollar cheaper or more paint apps or whatever. But they're fine, and I like them, and it was a good price for both of them. Yeah. So I'm like, as long as it's on sale, I don't generally buy the movie stuff, but it was nice to have a Peggy Carter. And like I said, Captain America with a machine gun and pistol and knife and everything is always funny.
Well, with the shaky distribution and the way everything became, it was just, it's like, am I waiting for a sale? It was like, do you want it or do you don't want it at this point? So sometimes I'm like, I just bit the bullet and say, well, I want Dormammu or whoever. But
yeah, if shows come back, I'll be stocking the aisle because on those unpopular figs in the past. Yeah. I've seen them as low as like $5 a piece or, the ones that no one wants. And I'm like, I'll buy it for junk pricing just because it's fun to have one to beat up on. But
yeah, it seems like some of the pricing of the figures, it's like the Hasbro Pulse store price, but at retail. And I'm like, that is unreal.
Yeah, the prices are definitely going up. Maybe those deals will no longer be. But there's always going to be figures no one wants. Like that's the advantage of that system.
At least I got I got an extra pair of Stiltman legs, but also I bought a second hand ninja. So it's not like a second hand ninja is a bad thing. Like it's cool. I got a cheaper, like another hand ninja for cheap. So I'm like, I'll take those Stiltman legs. But we'll see what happens. I don't know. Maybe some of them will. Show up in a couple years when someone doesn't buy like this wave, they got too much of that wave or something. So
yeah, it's always a fun weird, but hey, the price is only, they're never gonna get cheaper at this point. So
no, I remember buying them for like $12 and going, they're $12 now, but that was many years ago.
Yep. I thought this year it's been terribly uncool that the Conan book, first of all, has been relegated to just inconsistent releases. Like, there have been several months this year where in the previews there were no solicitations for any Conan book at all. And then when there are, for the most part, it started out so hot, and now it's like, even though there was some benefit to having a consistent creative team, the creative team has been pretty mediocre at best. There's some renewed effort in the King Conan limited series that just hit the stands, I believe, or is hitting the stands now. But overall, it seems like Conan got pretty quickly put on the back burner when they only just got the property back in 2019 to much fanfare.
Yeah. Well, does it? Can we put a Coolometer, the company that's also releasing Silmarillion-related comics?
Oh, right.
I'm loving that it's like, if you're not enjoying what Marvel's doing, well, there's another company that's making not Conan comic books that I think is a lot of fun. But I guess that's not... True. Does that belong on the Coolometer, guys?
I mean, it's you can't really say it's unlicensed. I mean, it's... I don't know. Yeah, I enjoyed some of those Conan, not Conan stories.
Sorry, not sorry. Conan, not Conan.
Yeah, I know.
But one thing that's been was really cool this last year and continues to be cool is John Byrne's Elsewhen.
Yeah.
How cool is it that John Byrne, in his quasi-retirement, for fun, is putting out...
That's wild.
True interior comic book quality, written and drawn fan fiction comics of the X-Men. So good, with so many guest stars, and really, what an amazing series.
Uncool. This might be seem a little strange, but I'm going to say Uncool Thor. I mean, unenviable task of following up on Jason Aaron's grand massive run, but you know, you have Donna Blake riffing on that classic superhero trope. I mean, that's fine, but I mean, you can do it where he's like a Captain Marvel thing where he's changed places, but I never thought he really went anywhere. And I usually the title doesn't excite my imagination all that much, so I'm hoping for better things, but it was largely uncool for me this year. And now it seems like it's a down year for Donnie Cates for me. And I thought he did some cool stuff, but I don't know. Just not vibing right now.
On the personal front, I'm going to say uncool for a lot of us, but very, very cool for the small select few. Those of you that have high-grade Silver Age Marvel keys. If you're sitting on a over 9 Hulk number 1, say, or any of those first, 12 Spider-Man or something, times are looking good for you if, say, you want to buy a nice house. Feel like selling your nice comics. We don't talk a lot about that. That's not our thing. But, man, if you were any of you were out there, it would be sure tempting to sell. You could literally buy a house with some of these prices.
Well, I don't know. I mean, house prices have gone up quite a lot. So
some of these are approaching.
You would have to see.
Some of these are approaching 7 figures in these auctions, Kevin. That's in a lot of places. A pretty, you know, $500,000 will usually get you a house somewhere.
Yeah, usually a decent house for $500,000. Yeah.
So think about it, listeners at home. There's it's crazy, some of these auction things. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's all a scam or something. But somebody's selling these things, and sadly, I don't have them, and not likely to have them. But I like that it's happening. It makes it exciting, you know. Although it makes it sad that I will never own them.
All right, let's try to pick up our pace on the last few rounds here as we round out our Coolometer here.
Well, I only have a bottom. That's all I have.
All right.
That's COVID.
That's
the bottom.
There you go.
My Coolometer. Everything related to that. 2 years in a row, COVID is the bottom of my Coolometer.
Yep.
Boy, I want to argue with you, Kevin.
Okay, that's like That's like the mic drop right there.
I mean, the ball at the bottom of my cooler meter is almost like shattering and it's just leaking out.
All right, I got a cool and a mediocre for you. It was so cool that Marvel recognized the 40th anniversary of the Man-Thing character. Good old swamp creature that doesn't even get his due in history, even though he came out before the Swamp Thing and from the rival company across the street at that time. But there was 40 years of Man-Thing in the Marvel Universe. But in my mediocre section is the actual Curse of the Man-Thing anniversary event, because they, in trying to do something new, they pretty much ghost-ridered him and made his origin, now that Ted Salas did a deal with Mephisto, basically a deal with the devil, and he lives out his curse since then. Along the way, they did very cleverly explain why the swamp is the nexus of realities and why the swamp was never the nexus of realities before Ted Salas became the Man-Thing. I thought that part was mechanically worked out and executed very cleverly, but yeah, he got ghost-ridered.
Yeah, I can't say I was ever a big Mephisto fan. I guess it's too much of like the angels and devils, and you get into the religious scripture and all that type of stuff, but there's definitely been some good Mephisto stuff. I guess if he's fighting the Silver Surfer or like giving pants to Ever K. Ross or something. But in modern times, a little too much Mephisto.
Yeah, I feel like there's enough. I never liked how he steamrolled Zarathustra, the original Ghost Rider demon guy. You know,
Zarathustra.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one. It felt like he got kind of the short end of it all, you know, in there wanting to roll it up. We should get a whole bunch of, you know, steal something from that Neil Gaiman, who probably stole it from somewhere else, about all the different lieutenants and everything and all the machinations between that. He didn't need to get all the credit for all that stuff.
You know, I am hoping for some good Ghost Rider next year, though, since there's a new series coming.
That would be nice. I got one more cool and one more uncool for you. Two ends of the spectrum. And then I'll leave the rest to you guys. Cool was Daniel Warren Johnson's Beta Ray Bill series. His portrayal of Bill, visually and character-wise, writing was excellent. Getting to see Bill fight Fing Fang Foom, and man, it was a great series. But uncool? How about all the stoppages with nonstop Spider-Man?
Oh, geez. That talk about a bad name for a book. I remember being at the shop this year and someone saying, "Is this stopped?" And then I was like, "That's done." And they're like, "It's nonstop." And I'm like, "It's not going."
All right, got any last shots?
Yeah.
Shot my load.
Top of my cool-o-meter has been lots of cool Marvel noise segments. Really enjoying hitting some of that 70s and 90s, both two things that are not my strengths in comic books. So it's really great exploring them with a couple of cool guys.
Wow.
We've been doing tons of Swamp Thing and vampires and Morbius, all these topical things. Morbius got the movie, Swamp Thing's 40th. We've been doing 90s with our New Warriors, carrying on the tradition from the Thunderbolts. It's been fun. Like, I like exploring, to me, they're new comics for a lot of them. Yep. And it's great exploring with you guys, having fun with it.
Our roundtables are fun, but I get the most pleasure out of the research and the execution of our feature segments, for sure.
Well, I know those New Warriors, you only want to read the good ones.
No, he only has read the good ones. See, that's super.
Well, so I'm thinking, in 2021, we're going to get to the good ones, right, Steve?
I sure hope so. Maybe okay. Next episode we can... We can...
Oh, 2022. Excuse me. I forgot what year it was again.
There were a couple of good ones this year.
Okay.
They're coming back up on the rotation, so maybe that'll be next episode. We'll see.
I mean, you weren't on every episode of those, so you didn't have to go through like all that like NTV that was the MTV and all that stuff, so you missed some stuff.
Did he really miss it though, Kevin?
I don't know if he really did.
Alright, let's make that the end of our 2021 podcasting efforts. Yay! We did good keeping the schedule on track this year, and let's see if we can keep... We even got ahead of the game, which led to some comfort on our parts. So let's see if we can do that again for 2022. All right, thanks as always, you guys, for helping me do this show week in and week out and putting together this Coolometer, which is going to present itself very interestingly visually when we post it on the social medias.
That's very cool.
Yeah, can't wait for that Disney cease and desist.
All right, until Kronos revives a fourth version of Drax, make mine Marvel. Later.